Hello, friends. This is the Neatarts Friends Church podcast. We are Jesus people, Kingdom of God people, welcoming, yearning, sharing. And we're glad you're connecting here with us. We'd love to connect in person as well. If you're inclined to support this podcast or for more information, just hop on over to neatartsfriends.org. That's neatartsfriends.org. Let's jump into today's sermon. Have you ever tried really hard to clear out some space in your life, only to find it filled in again with something even worse? There's a phrase attributed to Aristotle: nature abhors a vacuum. And we live with this strange conundrum. You get so sick of the clutter in your house that you go all out, cleaning, organizing, throwing things away, and the empty space feels amazing. Until a month later, the shelves are full again, only messier and more chaotic than before. Or you're frustrated with how much time you're spending scrolling your phone, so you declare a social media detox and you delete your social media apps. At first you feel free, but soon you're doom scrolling the news or online shopping just to fill the space. The pattern didn't leave, it just changed costumes. You aren't sure if you replaced one addiction with another addiction, or if you're just addicted to your phone in general. The empty space somehow filled up with something worse. Or it's springtime, and the weeds are coming up in the garden, and soon you'll be tilling, so you pull every weed in the garden, and the bare soil looks beautiful. But a number of weeks slip by without planting, and suddenly the weeds are back with a vengeance, stronger, deeper, even more tangled. The empty space somehow filled with something worse. Or you just got out of an unhealthy relationship and told yourself you'll never go through that again. But without healing the attachment wounds underneath, it's like there's an emotional vacuum drawing you towards the same patterns. You find yourself drawn into something eerily similar with someone new, only worse. Or you're trying to break a habit cold turkey. You aren't ready to call it an addiction, but it is compulsive. You hold out for a couple of weeks on sheer willpower, but then you fall off the wagon. And when you do, it's not just a slip, it's a binge. Your body was storing up all that empty space as urgent energy, and the binge spirals into shame, which leads into more of the habit, and the space you fought so hard to create feels like you'll never get it back. The empty space is now filled with something worse. Or there's an important relationship in your life that's feeling way too enmeshed and you just need space. So you pull back, you make some space, which initially feels really good and needed, but somehow the distance turns into disengagement and checking out and disconnection and stonewalling. And the space becomes a vacuum for internal narratives. They'll never understand me. I'm better off without them. And the relationship is worse off than it was before. Or the situation at work has some really unhealthy dynamics going on, but then someone gets fired or they leave or a position changes, and you hope that this is going to change the whole emotional system and function like a reboot. There's a new person arriving, but the dysfunction isn't gone. It just reappears through old patterns and unresolved residue, and the new person has to try to fit into the same broken mold, and the empty space gets filled with a worse mess. Even entire nations across history experience this. Political turmoil turns into political revolutions. Regimes fall. Space is made. But instead of peace, the vacuum gets filled up with chaos, militias, new rulers wielding the same kind of power, which turns into the same old problems in different uniforms. These are all stories of regressions. The act of going back to a previous place or state, a reversion to a chronologically earlier or less adapted pattern of behavior and feeling, a reversion to an earlier mental or behavioral level. Whether we're talking about soil or family systems or emotional systems or national systems or your own soul, the story of regressions can be found. The story of regressions is that external changes are made, surface level changes are made, space is made, and everything looks like it's going to be good. But life continues to be life, which means pressure, stress, disorientation, threats, and somewhere in the mix, a regression happens. The nervous system takes people back to what it already knows. When those old patterns and old behaviors and default modes of coping and old narratives get reactivated, they don't want to pick up where they left off. They want to pick up further down the road. And so those dysfunctional behaviors come back in ways that are amplified, louder, stronger, more entrenched. So a discussion question here that we chatted about in groups on Sunday. If you're listening with someone, you can chat with them or just reflect on this. Can you think of a time or times in your life when you tried really hard to clear out some space, only to find it filled in again with something even worse? When have you witnessed this dynamic? So take a moment, reflect on that. All right, this brings us to our gospel story today, Luke 11. It can also be found in Matthew 12. Jesus was driving out a demon that was mute, and when the demon left, the man who had been mute spoke, and the crowd was amazed. Jesus knew their thoughts, and he said to them, "When an impure spirit comes out of a person, it goes through arid places, seeking rest, and it does not find it. Then it says, 'I will return to the house I left.' When it arrives, it finds the house swept clean and put in order. Then it goes and takes seven other spirits more wicked than itself, and they go in and live there. And the final condition of that person is worse than the first. So it will be with this evil generation." When I read this story about this man in Luke's gospel, living in a world without words, mute, I can't help thinking of Helen Keller's experience. She wrote, "Blindness separates people from things, deafness separates people from people." I can hardly imagine the isolated and alienated feelings of being mute. At the age of 19 months, an illness left Helen Keller blind, deaf, and mute. And the common theory at the time was that it was brain fever, and people said that Helen had been left, quote, an idiot. She was a wiggly, wild, giggling, chuckling, kicking, scratching, screaming child with no one who understood her until the age of 8, when her father could finally afford expert child care and Miss Sullivan entered her life, the person who eventually helped Helen unlock the world of language. I think about this man who Jesus freed, and I wonder what previous narratives occupied his heart and mind. Before Jesus, how often did he think or feel like, "I'm a failure, I'm a problem, I'm worthless, I have no control, I have no voice, I'll never be safe, it's all my fault, I'll never forgive the ones who bullied me, I hate the ones who've abandoned me.
The Word made flesh
gave this man the gift of words. Jesus made space for words. He swept the house clean, as it were. But that did not determine what would happen next. Helen Keller speaks of her own experience here when she says, "Often we look so long at the closed door that we do not see the one that has been opened for us." What words would inhabit this man's heart as he moved into his new season of life? Would this man re-narrate his life in light of his new experience with Jesus? What words would live inside of him? Would they be the words of Jesus? "I am the door. I am the light of the world. I am the bread of life. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given unto you. Do not judge. I've called you friends. I am the resurrection and the life." Simply because the house was swept clean, simply because this man now had the gift of language and words, didn't automatically mean that the words that poured forth from his heart would be words of light and life. Within the same conversation in Luke 11, Jesus warns. He says, "See to it then that the light within you is not darkness." Jesus knew that this man could experience a regression. Seven spirits more wicked than the first could easily find his heart still empty and recapture it in victimhood, shame, and powerlessness. He could easily experience a setback. He was living in a world where people were not used to treating him like he had anything to say. And so after the initial shock of hearing him talk, they might revert to their default mode, treating him like he didn't have anything to say. And this man might believe those old narratives once again. "It doesn't matter if I can speak. I don't have anything to say. Nobody wants to hear me anyways. I have no voice." And if that happened, you might say that seven spirits more wicked than the first had taken hold of his heart, and the final condition would be worse than the first. So can you see what Jesus was getting at? This dynamic, it isn't something that just infects and affects individuals in bizarre ways in ancient times, and it isn't just archaic language. This dynamic impacts entire generations, entire people groups, Jesus says. You want to be free from what's binding you up. There are limitations and powers that are holding you back, and you want to get rid of the bad. You want to remove the evil. You want to stop the negative behaviors and the negative thoughts and clear out the anxious patterns, clear out the dysfunction, clear out the problems, erase the bad habits, detox the soul. You want to sweep the house clean. You want to put your house in order. You want to get your life in order. That ancient language, put in order, that word describes the idea of inward morality, seeking the moral high ground. And you think that getting rid of the evil is the final solution. And there's a surface level holiness to it all. It's an attempt at an external solution to an internal problem. The Apostle Paul describes the attempts like this in Colossians 2. He says, "Why do you live as if you had to obey such rules as don't handle this, or don't taste that, or don't touch this? After these things are used, they're no longer good for anything. So why be bothered with the rules that humans have made up? Obeying these rules may seem to be the smart thing to do. They appear to make you love God more and to be very humble and have control over your body. But they don't really have any power over our desires." Family systems theorists Steve Cuss and Ian Cron talk about
how people say, oh, that person has a drinking problem or a workaholism problem or a codependency problem or an anger problem or a spending problem or fill in the blank with what kind of problem. You can hear the attempt there to put the house in order, like do not handle, do not taste, do not touch. It's like, we got to sweep this house clean. But Ian Cron says, no, none of that is actually true. He says they don't have a drinking problem or a workaholism problem. They have a drinking solution. They have a workaholism solution. They have a codependency solution. They have an anger solution, a spending solution. He says, this thing is not the problem. They're suffering from an ill-conceived solution to the problem. So all of the do not handle, do not taste, do not touch, all the attempts to put the house in order, they only prove you haven't identified what it is in your heart that you're actually looking and longing for. And once you engage the journey of going and exploring the real problem, which is a journey, it's deeply spiritual, biological, psychological. If you can come to the real wounds, the real problem, if you can spend time, healing time with Jesus there, then your old solution may be rendered unnecessary. It may lose its allure. You won't keep falling into the regression patterns of try harder and apply more of the same. Don't handle, don't taste, don't touch, and just dig yourself in deeper and deeper. It's not enough just to get rid of the demon. It's not enough to empty the house and sweep it out. Nature abhors a vacuum, and the vacuum will be filled with something. The question is, whose presence is going to fill that space? What good is it to sweep the house clean if it's not inhabited? It's not a question of emptying your mind, it's a question of filling your heart. Teresa of Avila says, solitude is not a state of emptiness, but a fullness of presence. So if you remove evil, but do not fill your heart with the goodness of the presence of God, you're only left vulnerable to an even greater setback. It isn't just getting rid of that anxious pattern, that demon, as it were. It's finding grounding, the fullness of presence through the Holy Spirit. New York Times best-selling author on habits, Charles Duhigg, says it this way. He says, you can't erase a habit. You can only replace it. Or it's said this way. Watch your thoughts. They become words. Watch your words, they become actions. Watch your actions, they become habits. Watch your habits, they become character. Watch your character, it becomes your destiny. Nature abhors a vacuum. That empty space will be filled with something. You will be shaped by someone's narratives. You will serve someone. You will be discipled by someone somewhere. You will give your allegiance to a kingdom, some ruler. You will live out of a set of behaviors, practices, habits, patterns. So will you choose the path of regressions or presence? So what have you done? To tend to those most wounded parts of yourself, your childhood attachment wounds, the things that activate all of your attempted solutions. How are you keeping those most vulnerable parts of yourself loved and taken care of? What story, what narratives are forming you? What kingdom is shaping you? What community are you sharing life and building bridges with? What sense of identity and purpose are you living out of? What practices and patterns are helping you find grounding? What wholeness and light is filling your being? So, a final reflection question. Reflect on what it means for you to live in ways that make you vulnerable to regressions, and what it means to live in ways that fill your heart with the Spirit's presence, wholeness, and light.
Thank you for joining us for a Sunday sermon from Neatarts Friends Church. We hope you'll join us soon for one of our in-person worship gatherings. For more information, hop on over to neatartsfriends.org. God's peace be with you, friends.